There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Well, if it is a dead cat, I've never been happier to see a dead cat bounce as I'm watching the Dow right now, up, 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 and continuing to climb through trading right now. We'll see how the rest of the day holds. We'll talk more about that coming up in today's show. It is Midday Mobile, live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad to have you along. And the phone number, text line, 343-0106. Lots to do on today's show, and we're going to line out a lot of different guests, a lot of different subjects. But I wanted to start off, and it's a treat to get to talk to this man after it's been way too long. Lieutenant Governor of the state of Alabama, Will Ainsworth, joining us. And first batter up on today's Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, Sean, always glad to be on. Love y'all's part of the state. And you know, certainly right now, y'all are in a tough spot, you know, with the cases going up. But I think the thing that's good, y'all got great leadership down there. I think people are responding to the order. And, you know, we're going to beat this. We're going to start flattening the curve. You know, but it takes some time. You know, it takes usually, you know, at least a minimum of 2 weeks before some of these things go into effect, before you start seeing the benefits. But, you know, I think right now we're seeing some encouraging signs across the state with, you know, trends flattening out, which is a positive thing when you look statewide. But in y'all's part of the state, I know there's certainly a rise, and part of that's due to, you know, the increase in testing.
And that's part of it, right? That we've talked about that for some time, that the testing, as more tests are given, it's not changing the number of cases, it's just revealing the number of cases.
Yeah, and I think so, and I think that's important. I think when you look at what is a strategy, and when you listen to all the public health officials, when you listen to the medical professionals, you know, what we've got to do is choke this virus out. And the way you do that is by, you know, testing enough people where you can find out who has it, you isolate them, and then when somebody gets it, you find out who they were around, you test them as well, and if somebody tests positive in that group, you get them out to the population as well. But, you know, the encouraging thing to me is I think people in Alabama are now taking, you know, social distancing seriously. I think people are actually using masks, and that's a positive thing, because what we found is, you know, people potentially get this virus from a surface, they get it from talking, they get it on their hand and then touch their mouth, and now the virus has spread. And so, you know, what's a positive sign to me in Alabama is people are practicing what the public health officials have asked them to do. And so what we're seeing, we're not seeing exponential growth anymore, we're seeing linear growth. And that's a positive and going to help us be able to manage this and come back out of it sooner.
And with linear growth, you can, as Barty Fife said, you can nip it in the bud a little more easily.
Exactly. I mean, that's going to help us choke it out, be able to manage it. And, you know, as our testing capacity goes up, that's only going to help us be able to do that more effectively.
You were, and I'm not getting into the political side, we can if we want to, but I'll just say some facts. You were, out of our state leadership, the loudest voice to for social distancing and to choke this out early on. I'm just going to, yeah, I mean, you were out front on that. You feel like more people have fallen in line now? You get some people behind you in thought, some commonality?
Look, I want to be real clear on this. It's not that I just listen to the public health officials. I listen to every doctor, and they're unanimous in what they said and how we needed to act. And so it became clear to me early on is that a lot of people in Alabama were not taking this seriously. And so I felt like, you know, I need to do what I could do in my capacity to bring awareness to how serious this was and what all the public health officials and doctors said we need to do to stop this. because the sooner we acted and the sooner the people in Alabama responded, you know, the sooner we can get back to, you know, a normal life and actually opening back up some of these things. And so that's why I acted, but it was all based on the unanimous, you know, across the board, you know, from the medical professionals. And I think down there in y'all's part of the world with the Mardi Gras situation, what I saw there and talking to my friend in Louisiana that's the lieutenant governor there is, you know, there's a lot of similarities, right? And, you know, Mardi Gras was first established in Mobile. You know, it's obviously a very popular thing. I went to it for the first time ever last year. So I think just the public interaction, you know, obviously that's just a natural spot, you know, for people to interact and for the virus to spread. But I think the actions and what's going on there is going to make sure, you know, we control it and choke it out. And then, you know, hopefully when April's over, we can start releasing some of these restrictions and get back to, you know, our normal life, which is important.
We're talking to Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth. And with the Mardi Gras discussion, I mean, this is... There weren't. It wasn't a kitchen table subject like it is now at Mardi Gras. I mean, do you believe that a lot of people are trying to figure out, you know, what the timeline is? Did it come to California, New York? Then did it move? How did it get there? Do you think it was present here in Southwest Alabama during Mardi Gras?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think it was probably present, you know, all over the state at that point in time. And when you look at, you know, kind of how, I mean, it's several things. One, there's a lot of people that are asymptomatic that get it. That means they don't even know they have it. And the problem with that is you've got somebody that's spreading it. You look at the incubation time, you know, anywhere from 5 to 14 days after somebody gets it until they start showing symptoms. Some people don't show any symptoms, right? And some people start showing symptoms 10 to 14 days later. So you look at, you know, a lot of times the first spread of this could have been, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks after Mardi Gras. And but I think certainly, you know, that I do believe at that time throughout the whole state there was, you know, people that had this. I do believe that.
Okay, so that would have been, I mean, late February, beginning of March, that we had those cases already present in Alabama.
That's right. We didn't know it at the time, right? I mean,
right.
I don't think anybody did.
I didn't.
But I think looking back at it, I think that's certainly what we think was, you know, probably community spread was going on at that time, even though no one knew that.
You know, the other part of this is we have a certain percentage of Alabamians that are going to be affected by this directly or 1 degree or 2 degrees of separation from somebody with a case of COVID-19. But 100% of us are suffering under the economy, that this is this absolute whiplash stop to what was a fantastic economy.
Yeah, correct. And that's why, you know, I've been advocating, and I think I'm a big believer in, the sooner we choke this out, the sooner we get back to, you know, the economy that we all like. It's probably going to still have some different things we have to do potentially. You know, if they're talking about, we might have to wear masks in some of these things we do, which I think that's smart. I think people are still going to have to practice social distancing. But I do think we can get a lot of these things back open. Obviously, tourism is a big part down there. We're going to have to be smart in how we do that, but we know it's vital for that part and really the entire state. And so, you know, I think looking forward, we're going to have to rely on our public health officials, but I also think there can be a balance to where we reopen these things. But right now, what we got to focus on is each individual in the state needs to do their part to make sure we stop the spread of the virus.
Yeah,
and that's really got to be our focus.
And I agree with you. At the same time, people do have to have some idea. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about this. Small businesses that are being asked to retain their employees, let's be ready for that turnaround when it happens. But there's a lot of, how do they do that? So can you hold on with us during the news break?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay, coming right back. More with Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth on Midday Mobile. We'll talk more about the website I mentioned yesterday. And actually the day before as well, small business resources here in Alabama and SBA loans. Listen, I've navigated that for our business here, and it's doable, but we could all use a little help in doing it. And we'll talk about that when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Our guest, Lieutenant Governor of the State of Alabama, Will Ainsworth. And talked about a couple things. Number one, an early voice, and we'll talk about the your reasons why you said it, but you were definitely a loud and early voice about folks in the state going ahead and keeping the social distance and trying to do what we could to, would you say, choke out the COVID-19, right?
That's right, yeah. I mean, if you listen to experts, if we can choke it out, you know, that's the whole key. And you do that by not letting the virus spread and by keeping people apart.
So one of the things that so many people are looking at here, you can look at it from a healthcare front and say, Lord knows, we just don't want more people sick. Obviously, wouldn't want fatalities from this. That's a major reason. But another reason is the faster we get past this, the faster we can get back to work in Alabama. And there's a lot of people right now, they aren't working. And there's a lot of businesses that are hurting out there, too.
Yeah, and look, I want to say this. As a small business owner, I get it. I mean, you know, one of my businesses is, you know, we've got several different small businesses, and we're in the same boat. I mean, it's they're suffering, but I think the thing that we've got to get everybody focused on is the sooner we get out of this, the quicker we can get things, you know, headed back to a normal direction, and, you know, that's important. And, you know, so one of the good things the federal government did in the bill they passed is for small businesses, for instance, if you keep your employees home, you know, if you're able to pay your utilities, pay your rent, you know, those things that they're going to reimburse you by forgiving the loan. And that's huge. And so, you know, my advice to every small business owner out there is the government put in place, the federal government did, you know, this package to help you, the CARE package. And it's these package of bills, you know, go talk to your accountant. If you don't have an accountant, you know, talk to someone, you know, for instance, your bank, but you need to go talk to your banker and find out which of those you're eligible for. There's going to be some that are open up for sole proprietors and, people that are 1099 employees, but those are important too. But we've got to make sure, you know, that was in place to help us bridge this gap, right?
Yeah.
Because we knew that small businesses were going to be hurt. And I think there was a lot of wisdom with President Trump and them putting that together. And what we got to do in Alabama is choke this virus out and let's get things rolling back to normal. And that's what's going to be important after we get over, you know, this time period.
Well, you know, we talk about the PPP and the EIDL and all that on the federal level.
Yep.
But specifically, I know that I saw you on Twitter talking about this as well, that Atlas Alabama for small business owner. What is this?
Yeah, so, all right, two different things I want to talk to you all about that are resources for business people in Alabama. You know, the governor tasked us, or our small business commission, so we have an emergency small business task force. And our goal is strictly focused on small business, how we can help them now stay open, whether that's curbside pickup or whether that's a delivery or, you know, whether that's making sure if they are eligible to be open, they can. If they're not, you know, make sure they understand the resources out there. So Atlas Alabama, it's atlasalabama.gov. It's a website that's created just for small businesses. It lists the, you know, all the different state, local, and federal, you know, potential guidelines that are out there, regulations, you know, any type of public health orders. It also lists, you know, different places you can go to get assistance. You know, and so it's just a resource for small business owners. Then the governor has altogetheralabama.org that also has a link, and it's got even more information. It's got stuff that it's a really good website she put together. It's got stuff that, you know, dealing with unemployment, dealing with, you know, how you go about that from, you know, lists the link to our website. So, and even more stuff out there if you have any question. And so that's two resources that, you know, the state has out there, and you know, we're going to get through this together. We're going to make sure we take care of small businesses, and we're also looking at what can we help when these small businesses get ready to open back up. What can we do to incentivize them from a state standpoint? That's one of the things that I want all the small business owners to know, that, you know, we're looking at right now, and, you know, we want to help them because we realize that, you know, it's been a tough thing, and we want to help them come out of this stronger and help them rebuild their business.
Well, yeah, I want to talk about that, what can be done, because I know that one of the stories I had on the show this morning was the opinion that came out from Attorney General Steve Marshall that some communities, I guess counties or municipalities, were wanting to use money that was maybe economic incentive money to try to to help out small businesses, but the AG, and I kind of understood, as much as I don't like the answer, but I understood what he was saying. Legally, they can't do that, right?
Well, yeah, on what, his opinion, what we're talking about, for instance, you know, there's all kind of incentives we can offer, for instance, that we offer, you know, the big companies when they come in, whether it's, you know, Airbus, Austal, you know, why can we not offer those same incentives? And this is what we've been talking about to our small business owners. And I think now, you know, that is something that we're going to have to really look at, is what can we do to help these small business owners, you know, get by and to actually get propped back up. And, you know, I think that's something we've got to do.
So, what could you do? Well, I mean, Lieutenant Governor, what could you do? Because if the AG is saying, hey, you can't, and maybe it's just the cash portion, could you do tax abatement or things like, because you're mentioning some big companies, we're all familiar with those stories, quartering.
No, it would all have to be with tax stuff, right?
Okay.
And, you know, and we're able to do that. I mean, that, you know, that goes on right now. And so, you know, I mean, we offer companies, you know, all type different incentives, whether it's sales tax, you know, and there's things we can do on that. And so whether it's abatements, you know, you'd mentioned, but there's certainly things we can do from a tax standpoint to ease the burden on small businesses, and I think that's something we need to look at.
But that, you know, that's, that brings up the other subject that I was going to talk with you about. We're looking here locally. I think Mayor Stimson today was saying that the city of Mobile could be looking at a 50% reduction in revenue per month because of COVID-19 and the shutdown. With 6% of our sales tax here going to the state, what are y'all going to do? And I know that's the job of the legislature, but what's going to happen in Montgomery? I mean, this is big.
So, great question. I'll say this. I think, you know, I'm familiar with the, you know, situation in Mobile, and I know Mayor Stimson's done a good job of putting money back, right?
Yeah.
I think they've got $60 million back. That's the right number.
Yep.
They
yep.
put it back to make sure for a time like this. We've done the same in the state of Alabama. You know, we have a rainy day account, and that was actually passed under our Commerce Secretary, Greg Canfield, the rolling reserve budget. And so what that does is it was to prevent proration or a time when revenues dip. And so we've got a mechanism in place to make sure money, because we've been doing really good as an economy. You know, we were projected to have $500 million new dollars in
yep.
our ETF. You know, and I think in general fund, you know, projected to have $100 million new dollars. And so obviously that's not going to be there. But, you know, we've had up until March, I mean, it's been good. April is going to be disastrous, right, on a tax standpoint. But, you know, I think what we need to do is look at the numbers. But the good news is that because of the economy doing well, because of us putting money back, that's going to help us to be able to budget and to, and that's just a conservative thing we've done in the past that actually Greg Canfield passed when he was serving the House of Representatives.
It's a good thing to have as a buffer, and obviously the faster we get the economy back on, maybe it's just a speed bump instead of a, you know, a big hill to climb. But I worry. I mean, I remember the days of proration here in the state, and I worry about that coming back in the next fiscal year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the whole thing was just a proration prevention bill. That's what that was to do, prevent proration by putting money back. And, you know, we've got a lot of money back, so that's a good thing. And we just got to see where the numbers are at. And then, you know, make sure we address needs. But I think, you know, I also think we've got to make sure we get these small businesses back going, because that's our economic engine. And so I will be in favor of helping small businesses get going, even in the short end. There might be a little bit of pain, but on the long end, it's the right thing to do.
What about other revenue sources? I mean, do you think over in the legislature there's going to be more traction for lottery going? I mean, it seemed like the traction was there last year, but that's all another discussion. Do you think if they gavel back in a special to do this for budget, that something on a lottery will come up or some other revenue stream?
You know, there's been a lot of traction in the lottery. The governor put together her task force to look at gambling, and, you know, I'm sure that report, you know, will be, I'm not sure where they're at on that stage, but cause I'm not involved in that. But, you know, I'm sure there's already a lot of interest in doing that. And I think when you look at that as a revenue driver from the state, that's certainly something that, you know, makes a lot of sense to let the public vote on. You know, I think that's certainly going to be probably more relevant now and a bigger part of the discussion just because of the revenue side.
As we'll have to do this again down the road when you can, we're past this and you can be in studio down here and come visit with us and hang out and talk on the show live in studio. All right, so we'll make a plan to do that going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Be glad to do that. The one thing I want to say is this, your audience, you know, we're going to get through this as a state. Everybody's going to work together. We're going to be stronger, but we have to do what we can right now to stop the spread of the virus. So everybody in, you know, South Alabama, if y'all can do y'all's part, we'll get through this quicker. Thank you so much.
Well said. Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth, thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you. Have a great day.
Will do. All right, coming right back, and we'll talk more about this from the budget perspective, and we'll check in with, you know, we're going to have more and more time now to check in with members of the legislature, the House and the Senate, since there's part of their week they're not gaveled in Montgomery. So we'll get that conversation going on next with State Senator Chris Elliott. That's coming up in hour number two. My friend Bill Riles, anchor at WKRG. He's an author as well. He got a couple books to talk about, a new one as well. You're looking for something to do while you're quarantined at home. We'll talk about it. And also, what's it like working at the TV station where they're all working from their houses, some in the studio, all that. We'll have that discussion coming up. Plus, Kim Garrett from Victory Health Partners joins us next hour as well. Y'all stay right there. Be right back. Shot
this one. This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Hey, heads up here, too. Just saw this. I got to find it. I saw it, and then it escaped me. There it is. From the Twitter feed from my buddy Bob Gripp. Who's, he has the busiest retirement of anybody I've ever seen, which we appreciate, Bob. But he put this up from folks at Infirmary Health. Says, for patients showing signs of COVID-19, Infirmary Health will host appointment-only drive-through testing sites tomorrow through Wednesday, April 15th. Site locations vary by day, but will cover Mobile and Baldwin counties. So, once again, Infirmary Health is doing this starting tomorrow going through the 15th of April. I don't know the hours, but it's appointment only, so they'd probably tell you. It's appointment only, but drive-through testing. To schedule an appointment to be tested, please call Infirmary Health COVID-19 testing hotline, 341-2819, 341-2819. A hotline is open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Bob also added here, appointments are limited, and the registered nurse performing the initial screening on the phone will be determining whether patients need to be tested for COVID-19 based on the CDC criteria. So that's going on, and that phone number, if you're riding down the road, there's no way. Maybe you have a memory like a steel trap, and you can hold on to 341-2819. If not, if you'll just Google Infirmary Health COVID-19 hotline, you'll get the information right there. All right, I mentioned we check in with State Senator Chris Elliott, who is you're sheltering at home, right?
I am indeed, working from home, thankful for a good, fast internet connection, which I know you and I both value.
That is for sure. And I like the fact, y'all, I'll just pull back the curtain here on our text conversation earlier. Chris was saying that his children are probably happy he's getting to talk with me because he's not watching over them for a couple minutes. They get some freedom, right?
They used to get upset when I got on the phone. Now they're like, will somebody please call him? they're looking for a break from dad teaching them things that they may not be used to being learned. Used to learning.
They're getting some at-home learning for sure. Give us some over-the-radio education here on this as well. With y'all gaveled out, and I kind of go back, actually, and the whole process of gaveling back in the other day to set a date certain to gavel back in, right? I mean, you had to, folks had to go back up to Goat Hill to set a new date to come back to see if you're going to gavel in.
That's correct. And essentially what that was a rule change that allowed during a state of emergency for the legislature to be out of session without burning legislative days. So once we gavel in, we have a certain amount of days that we have to get through the session in. And if we don't, then we're done at the end of that amount. And what the goal was to try not to burn those days if we didn't have to. Now, we still have to get out by the middle of May. That clock doesn't start. But when we talk about being in session, Sean, you know, I've talked about this before, I'm usually in session on a Tuesday and a Thursday in the chamber. Well, there's still an awful lot of work that happens. As a matter of fact, most of the work, the majority of the work happens outside of the actual chamber when we're in committee and other meetings, subcommittees trying to work on different pieces of legislation. So we're not in there voting on things right now, but make no mistake, there is a fury of activity going on. It's just going on with a lot of people that probably aren't wearing socks right now.
Okay, and that activity, is it working on the subjects we talked most about before? Is it the medical marijuana bill or prisons or lottery, or is it about how we're going to make ends meet with state budgets?
That's a good question, and I think the answer to that is, if it is what I would kind of call a small potatoes bill, then it's not being discussed, and it probably won't see any chance of moving forward in this legislative session. If it is something that is more overarching and overreaching, for instance, prisons, then yes, those conversations are happening right now. Budget conversations are happening right now. And then, of course, as the Lieutenant Governor mentioned earlier, lots of conversations about how do we help small businesses. You know, I'm working on a bill right now that will help small businesses from a tax standpoint. It will help individuals from a tax standpoint to make sure, get this, on your federal government stimulus check isn't taxed by the state of Alabama, because it otherwise would be.
We're working on
those types of things.
Well, okay, because, you know, there's been a lot of questions that said, hey, will we be taxed on the amount of money we're getting, you know, for the one-time check or other things from the feds? But I hadn't thought about the question on the state. So you're saying without a bill here, the state would be claiming a portion of that federal money that's coming in stimulus?
That's correct. So without the legislation that I'm proposing right now, I'm working on and have good support for, thankfully, that would be subject to state of Alabama income tax. And, you know, obviously, that's not something we want to do. The whole point of the stimulus is to try to get money in people's pockets to keep them going. Well, the last thing we want is a tax liability at the end of the year, certainly for individuals, and in my opinion, for businesses as well.
No joke. How are y'all discussing the fact that you're, when you look at working on tax policy, and doing that for small businesses, let's say it was sales tax or some kind of abatement. I thought about this when the Lieutenant Governor mentioned it. It's dangerous, because that's the revenue source for a lot of what comes into portions one side of the wall of state government, right? You want the businesses to be back open and working, but you sure as heck need that sales tax revenue to come back in for the next fiscal year.
You're absolutely right, and that is the balancing act. And, you know, as I told some of my colleagues, we have a conference call pretty regularly. I told them, I said, guys, now's the time to get your principles out. So you got to decide, hey, am I going to be on the side of government having what it needs in order to make it, or am I going to be on the side of making sure my small businesses and the individuals that I represent have what they need to make it? And I think you can tell from how I'm asking that question, I'm in favor of the small businesses and the individuals having their money to do what they need to do to keep our economy going. The economy, you know, while the government spends money, that's not what drives our economy. Small businesses, individual investment drive our economy, and that's who I want to make sure makes it. And if the government has cut back in the meantime, so be it.
Yeah, it's a tough thing, though. You're talking about cutback in government, because I look at the days of proration, which drives me nuts. The idea, and maybe there's a different version of it, but the way I remember it, it would be across the board cuts to all departments being the same. And to me, I don't value all parts of state government at the same level. I think there are some that are rank higher. There's a real triage list. I think if you ask most Alabamians, they would agree.
You are correct, and I will say that I do not anticipate that's what we're going to have right now. So let's go back and talk about fiscal years and when the government starts its fiscal years in October. So we got a couple of months there before we even hit the new year, and then going up through really the end of March before this started having a financial impact on revenues. We were going like gangbusters, right? We had money coming in hand over fist. You know, the general fund was up. The education trust fund was up $500 million. This is projections for just this year alone, up $500 million. So we had a great first half of the year. Now the question is going to be, how can we make it through the rest of the year? How deep is this hole? How big is this cliff? And how long are we there? When does it come back?
Right.
And I think that what we will see is in the next couple of weeks, this is going to to move along. We're going to get back to normal, I think, by the middle of May for certain, if not, a little bit, maybe the late May before we can call it normal again. But I think you're going to see this trend come back if we do what we're supposed to be doing, which is practicing the social distancing and really kind of squash this transmission of this bug. And if that happens, I think that the early gains that we made during this year from a revenue standpoint will be more than enough to keep us from having to get into prohibition.
All right, coming right back, more with State Senator Chris Elliott. Want to talk more about this. Also, any other discussion of what might be plugging any budget shortfall out there outside of current revenue streams? Yeah, of course. I mean, that's a euphemism for lotto, isn't it? All right, we'll talk about that when we get back.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Our guest, State Senator Chris Elliott, talking about revenue and Montgomery, and also the fact is you're pointing out that there's still a lot of the sausage making going on, even though it may be not going on inside the Senate chambers or the House chambers. There's still work being done.
Quite a bit of it. You know, again, looking at budgets, looking at prisons, looking at ways to try to figure out how, and we're limited as a state, but how to figure out ways legislatively we can assist small businesses and individuals with recovering from this pandemic.
All right. It seems like it's frivolous at this point with everything going on to talk about things like lotto that have dominated the discussions you and I've had over the years, but maybe not if it's a revenue source. And is it lotto? Is it a compact with the Portage Panda Creek Indians? Is that bouncing around y'all's conversations right now?
Honestly, not in any of the conversations that I'm having. There are going to be other things that I think plug the hole from a state revenue standpoint in the form of stimulus money from the federal government. You know, you and I always talk about, you know, what's the next great aunt that's going to pass away that's going to plug the big budget hole. And forgive me to all the great aunts listening, all the wonderful people, but I feel like the state operates that way sometimes.
Like always.
But I do think that there's a good likelihood that we're going to see some federal stimulus money that comes in that props us up this time so that we're not having to rely on a lottery. I'm not shying away from a lottery conversation. You've had me on many times in support of it,
right?
But that's not going to be a requirement in order to get us out of this crisis.
So, and when you're talking about federal stimulus money, you're not talking about what's coming to the citizens of Alabama through the one-time payment or the PPP loan or something like that. You're talking about a check that comes to Montgomery.
That's correct, and it's looking like it's going to be about $1.9 billion that will be coming to the state, and that's through some federal legislation. The question is going to be how that gets divvied up, what happens to it, and oh boy, here we go, Sean. The legislature and the governor talking about spending billions again. This sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. $1.9 billion coming. What's total general fund budget?
General fund budget is about $2 billion.
So the entirety of a general fund budget, you know, just save a little bit there, is coming in. Will it be used, do you think? What will be the battle? To grow government, to shore up more rainy day, to what will happen there? Will it be a fight to the ETF getting their part? Who makes those decisions?
Well, that is something that we're looking for a lot of guidance from Treasury on. The money is appropriated. Now it's a matter of what the guidance on spending it and how it comes to us. Whether the legislature is making those decisions, whether the governor's making those decisions, whether it's some combination of the two, is it going to be at the sole discretion of the governor? Is it going to be at the general fund committee? Is it going to be in the general fund and it budgeted through the general fund? How much of it may or may not go to affected counties and cities? There's one interesting caveat in the law that says that any political subdivision essentially of a state that has more than 500,000 people in it gets a chunk of the money up front based on population. Jefferson County is the only one in Alabama that has a number like that. So they will get their cut directly out of the state's portion. The rest is really going to be where the fight is, and that'll be very interesting.
Yes. I mean, an amount that's darn near the full general fund budget that's up for debate, it's going to be the most special of special sessions ever.
That's true, and it goes way beyond plugging a hole. It's going to be, you know, the opportunity to really fix some big ticket items if it stays at the state level, and then even if a fair amount of it goes out to our local community, states, and counties that are hurting at this time as well.
Right. I want to talk about another couple of things here. You mentioned prisons, and I read the story this morning that Governor Ivey had given, I think, another two weeks or so to these private companies for an RFP or design. Maybe RFP is not the right term at this point. Maybe it is for these prison designs. This is something you and I have been talking about for a long time. The executive branch dealing with this at one level. And explain that and your take on that. And then where would y'all in the legislative branch have to fill in if this is done?
Well, the manner in which the governor's office is proceeding with prisons is largely taking it out of the legislature's hands. I think that is a mistake. I know that a number of my colleagues do as well. Now, the governor's argument has been that this has been tried by the legislature before, during the Bentley administration, a bond issuance and a construction program for prisons, capacity program, and it failed. My counter to that is that there are a third of the legislators that are brand new from since the last time this was tried, and that she wasn't the governor the last time this was tried. So I think that we ought to be taking a swing at this, especially since bond prices right now, bond rates are so low.
Yeah.
We can borrow money as the state of Alabama so much cheaper than the private sector can. So my question is, why are we going to get more expensive money and using the bond market to borrow and to accomplish the same goal? I also do not like being at the beck and call, the mercy, if you will, of a P3. And you'll remember that term from another project. This is causing me some angst, and I think that we will likely see some problems with that as we move forward.
Why such the strong pushback against doing this through the legislative branch? Why the strong push to engage in this P3 now in the case of this one in a prison? Why?
Well, unilateral action is always easier. If you can simply say, I want to do this and I'm going to do it and this is the way I'm going to do it, that's much easier than trying to build consensus and get buy-in from legislators from all across the state, all of who have different interests and different folks, you know, constituencies that they have to represent. So I think, frankly, it's easier to simply take unilateral action than it is to build consensus and do it the other way. That can be the only reason, frankly, because it doesn't make any sense otherwise to go borrow more expensive money, pay rent for a facility you don't own, and run the inherent risks that are associated with bid proposals like this.
All right, and before we run out of time, I do want to get your take on this because I saw you discussing this on Twitter. A discussion that maybe AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, when of course he is out of office next year, maybe a different gig here, this discussion of Secretary of the Navy since Thomas Modley is out. What do you think about that, Bradley Byrne as Secretary of the Navy?
I love the idea. I think it would be a fantastic idea. You know, Congressman Byrne has been a hawk. He has been dialed in on what the Navy needs, both from the industrial standpoint when we start talking about Austal here at home, but you know, you see him at RENPEC exercises in the Far East. You see him working on Armed Services Committee, on the Sea Power Committee. I mean, he knows what the Navy needs and how to run an organization like that. Oh, by the way, he wouldn't have a problem getting confirmed, I don't think. He's very well respected on the Hill. You mentioned Modley, who was in the interim SecNav, only because the pending nomination can't get through. The nominee is currently the ambassador to Norway and is having some problems getting through the nomination process. Say what you like about Congressman Byrne, the guy's been vetted for about 20 years. There's not going to be any problem or anything that shows up that we don't already know about. And he's proven himself as a fighter for the Navy, and is, I think, would be a fantastic SecNav.
All right. We'll keep that discussion going over on the Twitter feed. And once again, you all are still working, members of the legislature, in your case, of course, in the Senate. But when you gavel back in and make things official on the floor, that's just still up in the air.
Well, we were supposed to be back in on the 28th of this month. I expect that that we'll get back soon after that, if not on that exact date.
What? Wait. That y'all will gavel back in on the 20th. I saw that when it was set. I said, no way. You think y'all will actually go back to work on the 28th?
I think there's a good likelihood of it. As long as this thing is headed back in the right direction, I think members are anxious to get back to work. As long as we can take certain measures to keep any further spread or transmission to take place. You may not see the public invited in. It would be just fine with me if the lobbyists weren't invited back into the state house. That would be nice. But we could certainly get back to work, and I'd like to do that sooner rather than later.
There he is. State Senator Chris Elliott, as always, appreciate our discussion, and we'll check back in with you real soon.
Thanks again.
All right, Dad, the kids now are going to be upset. You're off the phone, and you're back to giving them guidance.
I think they're ready for lunch now, so this actually may be a good thing for them.
All right, Ben. Thank you. Coming right back at hour number two of Midday Mobile. My buddy Bill Riles, WKRG anchor, also author. We're going to talk about his new book and his catalog of books that maybe might be right for your social distancing. You want to sit down, consume some literature. He's got some for you. Plus, I want to talk about pulling back the curtain, what it's like to work at a TV station during times of COVID-19. We'll do that as well when we return. Y'all stay right there.